Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, what a dank, dreary day it's been at the US Open today. However, thankfully, due to the invention of roofs, we've actually had play. Catherine, play hasn't finished for the day as we come to you right now. We're between sessions. Everything on the outside courts has been cancelled. Catherine and I are standing adjacent to the Amazon Prime Video studio. We're actually standing in the Wow Wow studio, which is the Japanese broadcaster. It's very nice in here, isn't it? I like it.
Wow, wow, we've had a lovely day. They saw Kei Nishikori win.
Oh, yeah.
In the first match of the day, then set up shop and went home.
Yeah, so basically there are three studios lined up here. There's the Wow Wow studio, there's Amazon Prime Video, and then I think it's ESPN, the other side.
One of ESPN's many. Well, yes. It's their sort of cash studio.
Oh, right. They own the place.
They have like beach chairs in there. Beachy
and
sofas.
Then we sort of overlook these. How many are there? There are five practice courts right ahead of us, all lined up. And then in the distance, there's the Arthur Ashe Stadium. And everything is behind a sort of see-through mac, isn't it?
I've been broadcasting from sort of inside a shower today. It's felt like behind a shower curtain.
It's a shower curtain. That's
which,
what it is.
When Greg Rusedski sat next to you, is a weird experience.
Although you seem to have enjoyed each other's company today, there's been some good old chat and debate. There was a particularly good debate in the last 20 minutes or so. Now, what were you discussing? You were discussing Djokovic, and you were also discussing Alexander Zverev, weren't you? And the idea of the super coach, and how, in the case of Ivan Lendl, it hasn't worked. There's an example where it doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about all sorts today. I love it when it rains TV wise, because you just sort of give them free rein, and it's
Catherine does the podcast on the telly.
Basically doing the podcast on the telly with sort of Martina Navratilova, and it's great.
Oh yeah, she had Martina Navratilova.
When you've got people in
today.
Your ear saying, keep this chat going as long as you can.
Okay.
Greg was really punchy on, I mean, we were talking about Tsitsipas. I think the genesis of the conversation was the age-old discussion of the gap between the big three and the rest, and in particular the current failure of the next generation to really push on through. We ran an interview with Andy Murray from a couple of weeks ago in which he said he thought it would be 2021 when things would start to really change. I don't think he was ruling out the possibility of the odd breakthrough here and there, but before the whole complexion of men's tennis actually changed, he thinks 2021, which Greg thinks is not good enough. And it's not good enough for the youngsters to be just looking skyward and saying, well, it's because those guys are too good. They need to be looking inward and trying to displace them rather than waiting for them to step aside. And he thinks that coaching is a big piece of the puzzle there. I think he sees a lot of them, Tsitsipas in particular, and he thinks bringing an extra voice on board. I know he feels the same about Kyle Edmund as well. And it's certainly worked for Denis Shapovalov with Eugenie in the past couple of weeks, although albeit small sample size. He thinks an extra voice is what a lot of these guys need.
I think I'd agree with him, certainly with a few of those guys. When we last left you, We were talking ahead of Nick Kyrgios's match. We'll just wrap that up very quickly. I stayed for it for BBC Radio. It's one of those that, to just give you an idea, I mean, obviously he's somebody we talk about a lot, and sometimes people say to us, why do you spend so much time talking about Nick Kyrgios? Now, when I spoke to our editors back in the UK, and I said, look, it's midnight here, what do you want from us? And they said, well, who have you got? And I read it out, and they go, oh, Kyrgios, yeah, oh, we'll have him, oh yeah, but stay for him, stay till the early hours for him. So anyway, there I was at 20 to 2 in the morning talking about Nick Kyrgios, who had played against Steve Johnson, and it was straight sets. And at the start of the match, Kyrgios comes out and he does his sort of tunnel interview.
First ever interesting walk-on interview.
Yeah.
And Breaking news.
They said, so what are you going to do today? What are your plans? What are your strategies? So I'm just going to go out and try and put on a show.
He said, it's 11 p.m. I'm going to try and put on a show for these people.
And for the first set, that's exactly what he did. I mean, there were some just audacious trick shots, you know, elaborate, unnecessary winners in you know, things he could have put away in a regulation fashion, and he chose to do them in his own way. And the crowd, those that were there, they were just having the time of their lives. They were just high-fiving, they were standing up, they were laughing at the, you know, they were barely laughing at things he was doing. And that is the joy of Nick Kyrgios. And in the second set, Steve Johnson kept it tight. You saw the stress levels rise for Kyrgios. He started to have an argument with James Kyotovong about really nothing at all. And then
No towel beef yesterday.
He swore. He got an audible obscenity code violation, which we saw flash up on the screen, because that's what they're doing here at the US Open this year. And then the most interesting element of it, of all of it, was that Steve Johnson had enough of it. And he said something to the effect of, he swore as well, and he said, can we just stop talking and play? I'm sick of this. And he shouted that across to Kyrgios. And it just seemed to focus Kyrgios completely, who then started to pull himself together and play really well. And at the end, he played another ridiculous, I think, forehand cross-court drop volley and followed it with a little dance.
Already gift.
Is it? It's already gift.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Then the drama continued, because afterwards he did a little media huddle, and then he proceeded to be questioned by the reporters about his fine back in Cincinnati and his reaction to it. And he said, well, the ATP are pretty corrupt, were the words he used, to which they put out a statement today saying that they would be looking into those words and considering whether they represented a major offence or not. And then Kyrgios rather quickly put out a statement written in notes, because all tennis players' statements are written in notes on their iPhones, saying that he had chosen the wrong words. He had used the incorrect... it wasn't a correct word to have used, and he referenced that he... what he meant was sort of double standards, and he's certainly not suggesting that the ATP are corrupt, which I think was probably quite a sensible thing to have done.
Yeah, I wonder if lawyers were called, or
Somebody probably had a word in his ear and said, you can't go around saying things like that about people.
Yeah, and look, I think it's... I'm fine with all of that. I'm fine with him... He should be allowed to criticise the ATP. An accusation of corruption is obviously something legally a significant step further. But I mean, whether he's on any firm ground, I don't know. And the ATP have said they're going to investigate those comments. But him criticising the ATP, it pales in comparison, offence-wise, to what he did to Fergus Murphy in Cincinnati. And this is all kind of now... The latest chapter in the saga is obscuring the previous chapter in the saga, and for me the previous chapter is still niggling. And it feels a bit like deflection from Kyrgios,
like Alex Ferguson used to do.
But I still loved that match.
It was good fun.
It was good fun, and I was really pleased to see Steve Johnson kick off a bit about
it.
And I was sad for him that it actually resulted in Kyrgios playing better.
I'm amazed.
Because he didn't deserve that.
More people should... I sort of think, on one hand, more people should do it. I'm amazed more players don't just say, I'm sick of this. You know, and at the same time, it worked against Steve Johnson. I think if he'd have kept shtum, he'd have had a better chance of winning the match. But anyway, so that's what happened. Suddenly Kyrgios's draw is just opening wide.
Which is the worst possible news for Nick Kyrgios.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, I mean, I know what you mean, but...
You think he's going to lose to Rublev, don't you?
If ever Nick Kyrgios is going to have his moment, it is this fortnight.
You said that on the chat, which is now called Key Reserving Judgment.
Yeah, although there was suggestion earlier today that it might be renamed again to Kiri, oh my God, it's on. From your brother, Math, which was just genius, I thought. So anyway, we've just used up the first 9 minutes of the Tennis Podcast talking about Nick Kyrgios. For those of you that don't like him or don't want to hear about him, we're finished now. So we'll talk about other people. We'll talk about the fact that the rain is just splattering down on these outside courts. And basically, we've spent 6 hours waiting for Johanna Konta and Dan Evans' matches to come onto court. Konta made a brief appearance. It started raining and she went back again. And poor old Margarita Gasparian, her opponent, just sat there with a towel on her head, looking just utterly sick of it all.
Margarita Gasparian summed up all our moods today.
In one photo. However, the good news is, as I said at the outset, thankfully we have two courts that have both got a roof on them. And so we've had play. What did we start with? We started with Karolina Pliskova, and we started with Kei Nishikori. Pliskova won comfortably. Nishikori went the roundabout route that he tends to favour against Bradley Klahn of the United States.
Nishikori dropped a completely unnecessary set against Bradley Klahn,
who actually played very well. I mean, he came back, and there was a fantastic stare down after one particular shot that Nishikori
involved in a stare down.
Nishikori ran forward to a drop volley, okay. And he hit a forehand passing shot that was probably a little bit closer to his opponent than he intended. And Nishikori kind of smiled and laughed. Bradley Klahn was not laughing. he was doing the sort of over-the-shoulder stare down. It was one of those sort of... And then he looked away again, and then he had another look, as if to say, did you mean to do that? Because if you did, I'm coming over the net.
Kei Nishikori.
And there was that brilliant moment in the crowd.
He definitely didn't mean it, did he?
No, of course
Kei Nishikori.
Of course he didn't.
Can't even bring himself to do an underarm serve.
Because it might be unfair. And when he does do one, he just sort of giggles about it. But they did one of those things that I love in tennis stadiums. When you have a moment like that, and everybody, all the sort of din dies down from the celebration of the moment, and then they show it in slow motion on screen, and they show the stare down on screen. So if Kei Nishikori had somehow missed it, he gets to see it, and all the crowd are going, "Oh!" I remember that happening between Roger Federer and Andy Murray at the 2013 Australian Open. They played each other in the semi-finals, and I was out there in the stadium, not commentating that day. I was just getting some little flash interviews with people around the court, and there was a moment where they had words on the camera, and you saw them on the camera, and then they were shown on the big screen exchanging words, and we couldn't, I don't think we could see it in our commentary box, so it was more difficult to represent, but there was genuine tension in the stadium. Suddenly everybody in the stadium realized what was going on, and I love all that, as you know.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
So those are the first two matches of the day. Then Mr. Federer came onto the court and promptly lost the first set to Damir Schumacher.
Yeah, well, I mean, thank goodness for that. Thank goodness Damir Schumacher and Roger Federer gave us a long and good match today, because when the best thing about first week of slams is that buzzy, there's something going on everywhere thing. So when that's not the case, because it's piddling down with rain everywhere.
You can probably hear the rain. Listen to this.
All your hopes rest on two courts. And the Svitolina Venus match was decent.
Yeah.
But didn't catch fire. But aside from a very entertaining moment with a cup of coffee, didn't quite catch fire in the way
they brought
that I was hoping for.
Coffee out to Venus Williams, and she did start to play better at that point.
Well, somebody in her coaching box handed over a cup of coffee from the stands to a ball kid who very diligently grabbed the coffee and trailed after Venus Williams to give it to her. She, without a backward glance, left the court. So he just turned around and was just stood there with this cup of coffee going, oh no, how, I can't go in the loo with her. How am I going to get this cup of coffee into the hands of Venus Williams? And he looked so just awkward about the whole thing, and he ends up sort of scurrying off and putting it on her chair. Uh-oh. Anyway, she drinks the coffee and she wins the next three games, but then loses the match. It was decent.
Svitolina must have been really good, I think. From what I was reading from Tamani Karyal, who is the journalist for The Guardian who's watching, he said that Venus fought her heart out, but Svitolina was really good today.
She did, because she was, I think, a double breakdown, and she got one of them back. And Svitolina needed, I wasn't counting, and we didn't have the audio on, but she needed a lot of match points. Venus dug her heels in, and actually, every time I looked up, there seemed to be a slow-mo of Venus gritting her teeth, literally gritting her teeth, which is fantastic to see. She is 39 years old. Let's have a moment. She's 39 years old. And was extremely competitive today against the fifth seed, Elina Svitolina.
She's not too far off three times the age of Coco Gauff.
I can't process that. Gem's life still on.
Is it?
Confirmed.
What's that?
It is Gail, Elina, Monfils, Svitolina. It is the union.
And that's
it's the Instagram union.
Okay, so there's been some Instagram action, has there?
Well, no, but Monfils was in her box.
He was in
today.
Attendance. Okay, and she played well. Okay, that's good. Roger Federer lost the first four games against Damir Schumacher, who from Bosnia, it has had a tough season. He's had a lot of injury problems. I was reading in Matt's incredible notes that he does for Catherine every day
don't give away my secrets.
I've just done it. The catalogue of injuries are just incredible.
Yeah, he got inside the world's top 30. Last year, he was, you know, he was seeded at a couple of slams.
Lovely player to watch.
It's been tough for him,
isn't he? Because he's not a big guy. He just sort of figures out ways to make you uncomfortable. He likes a drop shot. He goes into the net. He's awkward. And actually, for those four games, he took it to Federer, and Federer was not ready for it.
He's got so much heart, hasn't he? Really digs his heels down. Won't lie down. And yeah, we were googling six love sets lost by Federer.
At slams, I think the
one at the French,
yeah,
to Nadal.
There were about four or so, four or five total.
No, I mean, Matt said the second most recent six love set that Federer had lost. I mean, this is an irrelevant stat now because he didn't lose any six love sets today, but it's such a good stat that it's going to get an airing.
we don't know when we might be able to use it again.
The second most recent six love set that Federer lost was at Queens in 1999.
Wow.
On his one and only visit to Queens when he lost to Byron Black.
Oh, fantastic. We're getting the eyes from the Wow Wow studio organiser here. We might have to depart the studio.
I'm just going to moonwalk out of the Wow Wow studio.
Yeah, we'll do that because there might be somebody really important coming in. So here we go. We're going to open the shower curtain and come out into the
it's like stars in their
into
eyes.
The corridor.
We've emerged,
and here we are. We've done it. we're effectively in the corridor, and very well done, Catherine and me. So he got himself back together, though, Roger Federer, didn't he? Because what I liked about the way he righted himself, he wasn't just playing games with Juma to sort of make him choke. He suddenly found his form, his groove. There was one rally when he was about 3-love up in the second set, Federer, where he just decided to tee off, and Juma was teeing off at the same time, both of them absolutely middling the ball. And I love it when both players decide, well, I'm not backing down. And Federer hit two swiping backhands cross court. Then he got one on his forehand, and again, he just hit right through it. There was no rallying to it at all. He just hit it as hard as he physically could. And you got a sense then, I think, of just how powerful he is, how good his timing is. And I think sometimes we don't realize that, because most of the time he doesn't need to play like that. He plays percentages and puts balls in corners. But his sheer shot-making ability to connect with a ball and send it through the air at maximum velocity is probably up there with anybody, really.
Yeah, there were patches today when he was breathtakingly good as I've seen him, when you were thinking, was that a dream, that first set? Because he was pretty horrible in the first set. Really, really rusty, didn't have any timing. The ball seemed to be sort of kicking up on him a bit. He talked after the last match about what an adjustment the conditions and the balls are, the fact that everyone's banging on about the balls being different here to in Montreal and Cincinnati, aren't they? And I think he's not too happy about it. He said, oh, the balls are different to the ones I was playing with in Switzerland. Well, buy the same balls then.
surely somebody can organise that for you.
I feel
you.
Like that's an achievable goal, yeah, for you, Roger.
It is a bit, really, isn't it?
But yeah, I mean, it was incredible the way he turned it around. Absolutely incredible. He didn't just turn it around and get good enough to win. He turned it around. He went from horrible to breathtaking, yes, in the space of a few games. But he can't keep doing this.
No. He's got to figure out a way to start correctly, because this is not really what he does, is it? I mean, yes, we've seen him this year lose the first set at Wimbledon in his first round match. But over the years, he wouldn't have to do this. But I think it's probably a symptom of not having had any matches coming in, isn't it?
Yeah, and as great as he was in sets 2, 3 and 4, I thought he was a little bit irritable in the post-match interview on court with Brad Gilbert. By his own standards, you know, usually it doesn't matter what kind of a battle he's had out there. He will give, and turn it on for those on-court interviews. And he was good.
What did he say?
But I just got the impression that he just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
It was fine. He talked about the adjustment. It was all quite nuts and bolts stuff. There was no charming one-liners.
Anecdotes.
Yeah, none of that. And, yeah, I just got the impression he wanted to get off court and have a chat with Ivan Ljubicic and figure a few things out, maybe.
Yeah. I noticed after his previous match, he talked about how he was struggling not to serve long all the time. So he was ending up adjusting by trying to almost serve into the net because his sights were out. Isn't that so fascinating to realise that even somebody who's as finely tuned as he is sometimes kind of has to bluff himself and do something a little bit, like aim a little bit incorrectly in order to hit the right spot.
I read those quotes and I tried to calculate or hazard a guess at how many serves Roger Federer has hit in his life. I mean,
how many are we up to?
how does he ever miss? Do you know what I mean? Like, how can that be the case, that you're having to sort of second guess yourself and readjust your aim? Like,
and that's what's so wonderful about sport, though, isn't it? And
yeah,
particularly this sport. I think it's similar in golf as well. You've never cracked it, you've never got it, and that's the end of it. It doesn't matter who
but
you are.
But what an awful feeling that it's not within your control. Doesn't matter who you are or how many serves you've hit in your life, one day you can wake up and suddenly you're hitting them all long.
Yeah.
You're doing exactly the same thing you were doing the day before.
I mean, it never happens to me. Whenever I serve, it's pinpoint.
Pinpoint bouncing before the net.
That has happened. other matches today? Have we had any other matches?
Madison Keys.
Oh, yeah, she looked good.
Beat Zhu Lin. She had a wobble in the first set. She was down a break in the first set. Found her groove. That's the most recent match that we've just been covering on Prime Video. Daniela, who incidentally has picked her to win the tournament, not with any massive conviction, I don't think, but she feels like she's as good a shot as any. I think she's encouraged by what she's seeing from Madison Keys, that she's striding in the right direction, or maybe tiptoeing in the right direction, but I think she'd like to see more of it. I think she still feels like she goes route one too often, and she needs to develop the variety in her game even more and not hit the panic button and just resort to leathering it all the time.
Yeah. We've got the evening session to come tonight. We're going to call it a day after this little chat for today, unless there's any drama tonight, because we were expecting Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams to probably win fairly straightforwardly. We'll wrap them up tomorrow. And
on Armstrong, it's Ash Barty against Lauren Davis, and then Grigor Dimitrov was scheduled to play Borna Coric.
Yes.
Under the lights, but Coric has had to withdraw, handing Grigor a probably very welcome berth.
He's on
in
a
round
run.
Three. He's on a roll.
And actually, this morning, I was on the bus from Manhattan to the tennis here. It takes about half an hour. And we call it the media bus, but actually it's for all the officials and all the line judges and various sponsors, etc., etc. And I was looking over my shoulder at Simon Briggs, and I suddenly started doing this double, triple take on this chap who was basically sitting one row across from me, and realised it was Borna Coric. And for some reason, it was on our bus. I mean, I'm sure I would have thought he could have got some chauffeur-driven car. But then, you know, it did. I wonder who he's playing today. So I looked it up, realised it was Dimitrov, but fourth match on. And here he was coming in at 9 in the morning. Now, admittedly, players often do practice early, etc. But on a match day, that felt very, very early in hindsight. I didn't really join the dots at the time. But then when you think about it, he was coming in to withdraw because he was physically unable to play, which is a real shame. He's had a terrible time with injury this year. One other thing that just struck me is the look on Simon Briggs's face, who was sitting behind Borna Coric. When Coric stood up to leave the bus, Simon just mouthed to me, "He is massive." Because his shoulders are so wide and he's way taller than you think.
It's funny, isn't it? You don't think of him as a massive guy.
He's really a big, imposing presence.
I remember thinking that when I stood in a lift with Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
I thought... Because he looks scrawny, doesn't he? He could be a bouncer.
So we've got Denis Shapovalov coached by a henchman. We've got Stefanos Tsitsipas, who's a bouncer in his spare time. The one other talking point that we have had, Catherine, is Damian Steiner, the umpire who umpired the Wimbledon men's singles final between Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic, and did an excellent job. I mean, 4.5 hour match. He has been sacked by the ATP, and the reason he's been fired is because he gave a number of unauthorised interviews following that Wimbledon final in his homeland of Argentina. I'm told, you know, you're talking quite a lot of interviews. You're not allowed to do them. It's in the code of conduct that they're not supposed to. He talked apparently about various elements of the job and maybe changes he would make to the sports rules and elements of the match, and he's got fired. I mean, it feels extreme. I don't know whether it is fair or not in the view of most people, but what a shame is all I can say for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like any discretion has been applied there whatsoever, does it? I mean, they've come down on him like a hammer. It sounds like he has very clearly violated the code of conduct, and fair enough, he should be penalised for that, but there's an awful lot of violating of code of conducts going on in the world, and not everyone loses their job. And
it's a shame they couldn't have given him
a really good umpire.
Suspended him for the rest of the year or something, then let him carry on. But, you know, there are people on higher pay grades and important jobs more than I am. I just think back a year ago to when Mohamed Layani was the talk of the town, and I certainly felt that, you know, a way back needed to be given to him, and it was, and it's a shame. It really is. But anyway, that's what's happened. That story broken by Chris Clary from the New York Times, who I'm hoping might join us on the tennis podcast at some point. Just trying to arrange diaries at the moment.
Diarize, yes. Is the verb for that.
Is it? Okay.
Well, if you're a bit of a prat, it is.
I shall try and remember that, and I shall diarize with various guests on the tennis podcast over the course of this week. So, evening session's coming up. Catherine's got a little bit more telly to do. I'm off into the town to go and go to bed, because I had about 4 hours sleep last night, and I need a bit more tonight. So, unless we have any more drama, we've been the tennis podcast. We've been brought to you in association with the Telegraph. We have got a little order of play here for tomorrow.
I've got two main courts order of play.
Okay.
If you'd like.
Yeah.
If there's any interest.
Hand them over.
Zverev against Tiafoe from 5 p.m. UK time.
It's a good match, that, isn't it?
That's first up on Arthur Ashe. Then Halep against Taylor Townsend. I love the sound of both of those. Yes, yes please. Wozniacki Collins under the lights, and then Kokkinakis Nadal. Lovely stuff. Lewis Armstrong, Petkovic against Kvitova, Osaka against Linette, and Isner against Struff. And then under the lights
Struff.
There.
Struff, say that again. Struff.
Struff.
Excellent.
I'm unable to do it in a normal tone.
Sounded good first time.
And then Coco Gauff against Tamir Babos at 7 p.m. and Charlie Stieb.
No, that used to be Charlie Stieb.
I know.
From Germany.
It just came out. It's Cedric Marcel Stieb or Stebe.
They're not even related, but I liked it.
I've clicked on his name there, and now I've lost who he's playing. Who's he playing? Marin Cilic. 2014 US Open champion Marin Cilic.
Okay, so that's all coming up tomorrow, and the rest of the order of play will be released over the next few hours, I'm sure.
They're having a tough time doing that, I imagine.
The good news is it's going to be glorious sunny weather tomorrow and for the next 2 days, so they'll catch up. It means you are all going to have an absolute tennis fest to enjoy on Thursday. Dan Evans and Johanna Konta will be on the order of play. I would expect that they'll be at the start of the order of play as well. So we will be back with you with another edition of the tennis podcast as well after play tomorrow. Catherine will be presenting on Amazon Prime Video in the UK for tomorrow from 3:30 in the afternoon. We'll have live commentary on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra as well. We are executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y, and we will be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.